If it's Thursday, 6 p.m., that means it's time for Perspectives by John Pierce. Welcome to Perspectives by John Pierce. I'm your host. Very pleased to have you join us, along with our engineer, James Zibrot. My guest this evening, Dr. Carol Cunningholm, is going to enlighten us about an organization that maybe you haven't heard of yet, Fair Districts Pennsylvania. And she chairs that. Is that right, Carol?
That's correct. Thank you for having me.
All right. It's an honor for us to have you on. She's co-founder and chair of Fair Districts PA, which is a nonpartisan, all-volunteer coalition working on redistricting reform in Pennsylvania. And we're going to talk a lot about that and why that's necessary. Right, Carol?
Yes.
In that role, she has spoken to audiences in over 25 Pennsylvania counties. 25 out of how many?
63.
Ooh, she knows her numbers.
I do.
Encouraging civic engagement and redistricting reform. Carol was vice president of government and social policy on the state board of the League of Women Voters in PA from 2014 to 2020. She earned a PhD in American literature from the University of Pennsylvania, taught literature and writing at the college level. Where did you teach, Carol?
Well, I taught while I was a grad student at the University of Pennsylvania. Then I taught at George Mason University for a bit while we lived in Virginia. Taught briefly at Eastern University on the main line, and then left for youth ministry.
Youth ministry?
Youth ministry.
All right. At a church?
At a church. At my church, yeah. I had taken some time off with my kids and realized that teaching was not my top calling, and that actually what I cared about was kids. And went into youth ministry and spent 11 years in that.
Yes, and that was at the Church of the Good Samaritan in Paoli.
Yes.
All right. Now you're involved in politics.
Yes, I'm involved in politics, and I never imagined myself being involved in politics, but I do have a kind of odd resume. And the reality is I just became really interested in kids, and do kids get what they need to thrive? And if not, what gets in the way? And so as a youth pastor for 11 years, I was involved in a partnership between my church, the Church of the Good Samaritan in Paoli, which is a pretty affluent mainline community. But we had a partnership with a parish in Kensington, which is one of the poorest communities in Pennsylvania. It's in Philadelphia, a very poor neighborhood, very diverse. Kids whose parents didn't speak English, kids whose parents didn't have jobs, kids whose parents had been there a long time and yet because of various problems were not well-resourced. And what struck me in that was that the kids from my church went to schools where I'd go to their school plays and they'd all have those little lapel mics and they all had counselors helping them think about college. And the kids in Philadelphia were in overcrowded classrooms. The schools near us didn't even have auditoriums. They didn't have libraries. That was the thing that caught me. We were starting to collect books to donate to the school library where we were, and I was told they didn't have a library. Oh. And when I started looking into it, I discovered most public schools in Philadelphia do not have libraries. And that's actually my moment of political awakening to say, how can you have poor kids in communities where they don't have books in their homes,
yes,
go to schools where they don't have libraries? Because I was a poor kid in a wealthy community that I loved my school library, and it made a huge difference in my life. And to think that there were poor kids who did not have libraries made me furious. And I said, oh, who is making those decisions? And that led me into looking at state politics.
Wow. Did you grow up in Philadelphia?
I grew up in New York, just outside of New York City. But I lived in Philly while I was in grad school, and then I live in Chester County now. Just looking at the difference in funding, that led me to realize that Pennsylvania at the time in 2016, this is like 2010 when this really hit me, 2010 had the worst inequity in terms of school districts in the country. In other words, we have school districts that are incredibly well-funded, and we have school districts where kids who need a great deal of help are in very crowded classrooms with no aides, no assistants. And I just could not understand how that could be possible.
And you're saying we, that means the state of Pennsylvania.
The state of Pennsylvania at the time had the most inequitable school funding model in the entire country.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
So here you are with a PhD in literature from University of Pennsylvania, and your family is saying, what are you going to do with that?
Right? Yeah, so I did youth ministry, and then partly because of my PhD in lit, I had spent a lot of time looking at, you know, historic documents in the formation of our country, in the formation of our state, and, you know, spent time researching in the historic libraries in Philly, and knew that Philadelphia was one of the initial, you know, forerunners in public libraries in the country.
Yes.
So there was just so much that was grating in what I was discovering, which is you have this state that was the keystone state. It was the kind of harbinger of freedom and equality in the country, which now had the most inequitable school funding model and the least school libraries per kid in the country, which pointed me towards this incredible funding gap, inequity in our school funding system. And I got involved with the State League of Women Voters. I discovered women who have been studying this for years and who are like, yeah, that's the case. And we have not found any way to make a difference on that. We advocate, we educate, nothing changes. And as I tried to understand that, what I stumbled over was redistricting, the fact that we had legislative districts that basically inoculated our legislators from public pressure. In other words, they were given very safe districts drawn by their leaders to protect incumbents in a way that made it unnecessary for them to solve the real problems facing Pennsylvania.
Now, these are legislators who go to Harrisburg to...
Well, actually, at the time, it was both. So our congressional delegation, what I discovered when I started 2015, Senator Boscola, I was on the state board of the League of Women Voters in charge of social government and social policy. And I was just kind of learning my way. And Senator Boscola invited the League leadership to a meeting in her office to talk about a redistricting reform bill that she was working on. And I'll be honest, I had never heard of redistricting. I don't know how I missed this, but I had never heard of it. And the bill was going to address partisan gerrymandering in Pennsylvania. I had never heard the word gerrymandering. So I'm a researcher. I quickly began to do my research and was kind of stunned that legislators were drawing districts to protect themselves and their colleagues at our congressional level and our state house and senate level. And what I discovered was that our congressional maps were among the worst in the country by a number of different measures, the worst by 3 out of 5 respected measures, and among the 5 worst by the other 2. We were the worst. I
mean, what are these measures?
Well, there's measures of things like there's something called the efficiency gap, which is how that I'd have to go into. This would take us longer than we have to go into them. But there's something called the efficiency gap. There's mean median skews. There's a number of different ways to just measure partisan bias in a map, and by the 5 most respected measures, we were the worst on 3 of those and among the 5 worst in the other 2. And there was no other state that was on every list except us. We were the only state that was on the short list for each of those measures. Yeah. Pennsylvania was among the worst. And we had one district that was surrounded where I lived called Congressional District 7, was given this nickname of Goofy Kicking Donald. You might have seen it. It's just the most obscene. Other people called it spin art. I mean, the districts were drawn to consolidate power for the people who drew the districts. At the time, the Republicans had drawn those districts for several decades. So the congressional districts of that period were drawn so that Republicans had 13 out of 18 districts and Democrats had 5, even when there was a 50-50 election. So imagine that, 50-50 election, 18 congressional seats. You would think both parties would have 9. They were drawn really carefully so that Republicans had 13 out of 18 in consecutive elections, no matter what the vote share was. That was going on at the congressional level, but something similar was going on at the House and Senate level, that the outcomes were pretty much locked in so that voters, no matter what party they are, have no way to hold their legislators accountable.
All right, so let's go back to the term gerrymandering.
Yes.
Where does this come from?
So gerrymandering, Elbridge Gerry, he was at one point a vice president of the United States. He was one of the original signers of the Constitution, but the only reason he's remembered was he was the governor of Massachusetts in 1812 when he signed off on a map that had some really distorted districts to give the advantage to the Republican Democrat Party. That was the name of his party, the Republican Democrat Party. And he signed off, and one of those districts looked like a salamander. It was a really weirdly shaped district that looked like a salamander. So the press called him out on it, and they called that the map a gerrymander after him, Jerry, his last name, and Mander from salamander. So when you hear the word gerrymander, dates back to 1812, and his reputation was sealed as a cheater. You know, he cheated on behalf of his party, and actually gerrymandering had gone on before that, but his was one of the first really stark examples of very extreme gerrymandering to control the outcome of the election, and that's where the word gerrymander comes from.
So how does gerrymandering become law?
Well, so every state has different processes for how maps are drawn, and that's part of the challenge. And in Pennsylvania, there's two different processes. So for congressional maps, it's introduced as a bill and passed as a bill, and then the governor signs off on it as a bill. So if the same party controls both chambers and the governor's seat, you can do some really bad stuff. You can draw a very extreme gerrymander and control the outcomes, which is what happened in 2011. So that's for Congress. For State House and Senate, there's something called the Legislative Reapportionment Commission, which was formed after there was a Supreme Court case in the 1960s, a national case, because lots of states didn't bother to redraw districts even when populations shifted dramatically. So there's a court case that said all the maps need to be redrawn every 10 years after the national census, so to balance out the size of the districts again. And so the Legislative Reapportionment Commission was formed in Pennsylvania after that, and that's five people, the majority leader from the House and Senate, the minority leader from the House and Senate, and then those four Pennsylvania legislators. The law is that they are supposed to choose a chair, a nonpartisan fair chair. They never agree. They have never yet once agreed on the chair. And the law says if they can't agree on the chair, then the state Supreme Court chooses the chair. So when the state Supreme Court is one party, they can choose a chair of that party, which has happened in the past.
But the Supreme Court is not supposed to be of one party or another, is
it? Well, but the truth is, in Pennsylvania, we elect our state Supreme Court, and they run on a partisan ballot. So the truth is, we do have a somewhat partisan sometimes. And in some cases, the court has been very partisan. And in some cases, the court has been not so partisan. But we have seen some very partisan selections for that commission. And we have seen some very partisan maps. So our House and Senate maps for the decade from 2011 through 2021 were also among some of the most gerrymandered in the country. And in fact, in the 2016 election, we were stunned to see, I think it was the 2018 election, we were stunned to see that we were 50% worse than the next two most gerrymandered for our House district. Our Pennsylvania State House map, the outcome was 50% off. When you think about a skew for a map, you think of if the vote is 50-50, you expect the outcome for the seats won to be about 50-50.
Right.
So that particular election, I believe it was 2018, Pennsylvania was the farthest between the votes cast and the seats won in the country, and 50% worse than the next two most skewed outcomes.
Wow. My guest this evening on Perspectives is Dr. Carol Cooney-Holm, and we're talking about Fair Districts, PA. In fact, we're going to talk more about that particular organization. She has already mentioned the League of Women Voters, and we'll talk about all of these things after a brief break. So hang in with us, listeners. Glad to have you with us. We'll be back in just a moment. Hi, I'm John Pierce, host of Perspectives here on WDIY 88.1 FM. Every month I present interviews on history, religion, and the humanities for people who value compelling conversations like you and me. You can help ensure that these conversations are around for the next listener to discover by becoming a member or donating online at WDIY.org or by calling 610-758-8810. And we're back with Carol Cooneyholm, who is our guest this evening. I'm your host, John Pierce. So glad to have you with us. Talking about gerrymandering and fair districts in states, Carol, there appear to be about four organizations that work together along with your Fair Districts PA. Tell us a little bit about how that works.
So Fair Districts PA started in 2016. There were a number of organizations that have been advocating for a better redistricting process in Pennsylvania for a long time. The League of Women Voters has been giving testimony on this issue since the 1980s. Common Cause PA was a valiant leader in this for quite a few years. A Committee of 70 has been interested in this. And when we started, there were quite a few organizations that wanted to weigh in. As it turned out, the League of Women Voters stepped up to be the fiscal sponsor of Fair Districts PA. So we're a coalition. We're a fiscal project of the League of Women Voters. But what we've turned into is really a grassroots movement. We've got an email list of over 60,000 with people in every single legislative district. We've got a volunteer email list of about 6,000. Folks who participate in different ways. We're citizens across the political spectrum and across the state who want a redistricting process that allows communities to be represented well and that allow our voices to be heard accurately and fairly in Harrisburg and in Washington, D.C.
I don't know anybody who could object to that kind of thing, to be accurately heard and for it to be fair, right? And it's nonpartisan. Would you say that gerrymandering has been done more by Republicans or more by Democrats, or is it about even?
Well, interesting thing, I think in the decade from 2010 on, there was a really concerted effort by Republicans. They started something called Red Map 2010, which was, I was stunned to find the website. I think it's still there. If you Google Red Map 2010, you'll see they stated online that they were planning to capture state legislatures to capture the redistricting process to yield a majority in Congress. Now, and I will say that both parties have gerrymandered across the years, and both parties continue to gerrymander, but it was a pretty stark announcement of, you know, we are going to capture Congress by drawing district maps that give us an unfair advantage. So the Republicans kind of took the lead on this for a while. Democrats have fought back. But certainly both parties have done this. And our argument is that for voters, this is a disaster no matter who does it, because we get shut out. It's the leaders who are giving safe districts to the colleagues that do what they're told. And so we know there are legislators in both parties who don't always agree with their legislators. They want to represent constituents, not the partisan game. And they are punished, and we've had Senator Boscola, who I mentioned was the one who first invited me as a League person to be involved in this. She tells the story of her own leadership telling her to get with the program and vote the way they wanted her to, or they would draw her off the map. And there are legislators on both sides who've talked about being punished for trying hard to represent constituents. And one of the best ways to punish a legislator is to draw them off the map, to draw their district in a way that makes it really hard for them to win the next election.
And they're going on the past voting patterns in that particular part of the state.
Yeah, and this is, as I said, this has been going on for a long time. But if you think about the data that's available now and the ability to control data and to manipulate what happens has kind of turned gerrymandering into a really high-tech tool. And the ability to kind of slice and dice. So the 2011 congressional map, if you look at the kind of the purple region around Philadelphia, if you do those maps fairly, those regions would have a pretty strong say in moderating partisan extremism to say we're looking for people who actually represent us well. It doesn't matter which party, because you know some of us are Republicans, some of us are Democrats. But that whole area was sliced into little crazy pieces. So if you look at that congressional District 7 I mentioned, it cut up five counties, and it went slithering through those counties in places where it was as wide as a parking lot. So Montgomery County itself was divided into five congressional districts when it can fit nicely into one. My own county, Chester County, was divided into three congressional districts when it could fit very, very easily within one. So what you see is the population being manipulated just to control the outcomes for the party leaders who are deciding who's going to get in and who's not going to get in, whose policies will get preference and whose don't.
Aren't the districts dependent on the population itself?
Yes.
How many people there are in areas?
Yes.
So how could you take, let's take the example you said about a county that could have just one district.
Yes.
And then they split it into five. Well, how do they do that?
So they take pieces of one and then they draw, you know, so that basically they say, okay, there's a bunch of Democrats here. We're going to sliver off a bunch of those and then sliver, take it through this Republican area here. And so drawing, if this wasn't radio, I would show you a map and you would say, oh, I see what they did.
Right.
So, you know, take a Democratic area, take a Republican area and control the numbers carefully so that you know what the outcomes will be. You have a strong predictor of the outcome. So remember, there was a lawsuit in 2018. The League of Women Voters sued the state on those maps, the congressional maps, saying these were drawn to control the outcomes. And what that does is deprive every Pennsylvania voter of a free and equal vote, which were promised in our state constitution. Our state constitution promises us a free and equal vote. And those maps deprived every one of us of a free and equal vote by controlling the outcome of the map. And so the Supreme Court agreed and said these are unlawful maps. And so we had new congressional maps for the next two elections drawn by a special master appointed by the court. Then after 2021, the 2020 census, those were redrawn again. Actually, Pennsylvania lost a congressional seat because there's 435 congressional seats across the country divided by population. Pennsylvania lost a congressional seat. But the new map that was drawn to be as responsive to voters as possible. And so if you look at the outcome of the 2022 election, there were 10 Democrats and 7 Republicans. After this most recent election, I believe there were, there were 9 Democrats and 8 Republicans after the 2022 election. There were 10 Republicans and 7 Democrats after the 2024 election. The current map is very responsive. If the voters swing one way, then they get more seats. If it swings the other way, then that party gets more seats. And that's the way it should be. The maps should be responsive to voters. The earlier maps, the 2011 maps, were not responsive to voters at all.
So you're happy with what's going on right now in Pennsylvania with the maps?
Well, I would say our current maps are much better than what we had last decade. And I would say that the House and congressional maps are, if you compare them by a number of different metrics across the country, they are very, very responsive and quite fair. The Senate map was still a little bit drawn to protect incumbents, if you look at it. If you're in the Allentown area, you can see how the Senate map was drawn to protect particular incumbents and to control the outcome a little bit, but much better than they were. But the truth is the process has not changed. So we could easily end up back in a very gerrymandered place in the next decade, which is why we are working so hard to change the state constitution to create an independent citizens redistricting commission, because we don't think legislators, political leaders, should not be the ones drawing the maps to give their party an advantage.
Right. So you're already thinking ahead to 2030-31.
2031, absolutely. And changing the Pennsylvania constitution is time-consuming, difficult. We are among 4 states that have the longest, most complicated process to change the state constitution. About half of the states have citizen initiative. So if citizens collect a bunch of petition signatures, they can get it on the ballot that year and change the constitution within a year. Of the other states, only 10 require an amendment to go through the state legislature twice. So we're one of those 10 that requires it to go through the state legislature twice. And only four of those have two-year sessions. So we are among the four most time-consuming, lengthy processes to get the Constitution
changed.
All right,
so let's suppose you are trying to get something through the legislature in Pennsylvania right now. And so you get how many signatures for that to happen?
Well, you know, we don't have to get signatures to get through the legislature. It's not – so if it goes through the legislature, it's not petitions. It's getting legislators to vote for it. That's the challenge. And we did in 2018, we had 110 co-sponsors for a bill introduced by Representative Steve Samuelson from Bethlehem. He had a bill – House Bill 1776, to create an independent redistricting commission. He had 110 co-sponsors from both parties. The leadership absolutely refused to give it a vote. And when he tried something called a discharge petition to move it from the committee where it was stuck, that committee chair amended it in committee to something completely opposite what the bill was supposed to do, and then didn't vote it out of committee. So he killed it in what we consider a really unethical and improper misuse of legislative rules. So the challenge is to get the legislature to pass a reform. And there are many legislators who would like to do it because the truth is the current process gives all the power to four leaders. And those four leaders can use the mapping process to keep their colleagues in line. And most of their colleagues would prefer to be able to represent their constituents and rather than answer to the leaders in that way. But those leaders are powerful. So part of the challenge is how do we get a bill past the legislative leaders? And that takes a lot of public pressure. It like takes a lot of people calling attention and calling their legislators and calling the legislative leaders. So I should mention, we have a petition, and it's not a legal petition. Pennsylvania does not allow legal petitions for bills to be passed. But it is a petition to apply pressure, and people can sign it by texting sign FDPA, all one word, SIGN FDPA, to 94253. Or you can go online and look at our website, fairdistrictspa.com, and there's a little join sign in the corner where you can click on that and get on our email list, but there's also a place that you can say, yes, I want to sign the petition. And then you get on our email list. And part of this is just helping citizens understand that unless we're really active and really loud, our legislative leaders will not allow this to move forward. And that's the case for many reforms. Pennsylvania sees many reforms introduced session after session after session. And if the leaders say no, unless the public gets very loud, those reforms will never pass.
Wow. Carol Cooneyholm. Wow, she has really carved herself a niche here with Fair Districts PA. She's the chair of it. And Carol, I'm going to ask you to give us again the contact information for people who would like to know more about this redistricting problem that we have or your efforts toward the 2031 redistricting, because it does happen every 10 years.
It does happen every 10 years. It'll happen after the next census. So the next census is 2030. 2031 will be the next redistricting. And the bills we're supporting right now are House Bill 31 and Senate Bill 131. And the 31 is there because we're looking ahead to 2031 and saying if we don't get this done this session and then again in the next session to go to the ballot before 2030, we will still have the same process that we've had in the past.
Okay, let's give those that
so
information
to sign
again.
Our petition, you can text sign FDPA to 94253, and that's a petition in support of an independent redistricting commission, or you can find our website at fairdistrictspa.com. And if you look, there's a join button there. You can click on that. But there's lots of information about what redistricting is, why we want an independent commission, and lots of ways to get involved.
Very good. Well, Carol, our time is up. I thank you so much for coming over to WDIY to enlighten us.
And thank you for having me.
And that's all the time we have for Perspectives this evening. We wish you all a very pleasant weekend. Thank you, James, for your work as our engineer this evening. I'm John Pierce. Until we meet again, Remember to be gentle with your neighbor.